From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, November 21st, 2017. And on this day, Southern Maine business owner Sean Moody is running for governor as a Republican. And we'll visit a primary care doctor where people are receiving treatment for hepatitis C. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light, now through December 31st. MaineGardens.org.
Gorham business owner Sean Moody launched his second run for governor today, this time as a Republican. Steve Missler has details.
Moody hit topics familiar to conservative audiences during his kickoff in Gorham, including limiting welfare, supporting veterans, and a business approach to government. He also talked about how growing up poor motivated him in business.
And every morning since then, I've woken up with one thing on my mind. I'm not going to get by. We're going to get ahead. And that's what Maine needs to think. Every individual in the state. We're tired of getting by. It's time for Maine to get ahead.
Moody, age 58, is hoping his unassuming demeanor and business background will resonate with a GOP primary electorate that has shown a preference for candidates perceived as outsiders. But he's enlisted several of Governor Paul LePage's political advisors to bolster his run, including the governor's daughter, Lauren LePage, and Brent Littlefield, a D.C. area consultant who hails from Maine. Littlefield continues to advise LePage, as well as 2nd District Congressman Bruce Poliquin. His clients often mimic the rhetoric and policy positions of the Beltway GOP, and they're often less accessible to reporters. That was true of Moody, who left the stage without taking questions or doing press interviews. Moody's personal story and folksy charm were widely applauded during the bruising 2010 governor's race, but the appeal didn't translate into a windfall of votes. He finished 4th out of 5 candidates. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Attorneys were back in federal court today arguing about a lawsuit brought by the Portland Pipeline Corporation against the city of South Portland over its Clear Skies Ordinance. In August, U.S. District Judge John Woodcock rejected the city's request to dismiss the lawsuit. But as Susan Sharon reports, the city says last month's cancellation of a massive pipeline project in Canada has undermined the company's case.
The Portland Pipeline Corporation would like to reverse the flow of its 236-mile-long pipeline and send crude oil from Montreal to South Portland. But the city's Clear Skies Ordinance, adopted with broad support from residents 3 years ago, effectively prohibits that. It bans the bulk loading of crude onto marine tankers. The company says the ordinance is unconstitutional, a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause. But before the judge can consider that question, Sean Mahoney of the Conservation Law Foundation says he must decide whether the company has been harmed by the ordinance.
And what the city has argued, which we support, is that there is no harm because there's no likelihood that they're going to be able to actually even try to switch the flow of oil in the pipeline.
Attorneys for the city told the judge on Tuesday that their position has been bolstered by the recent decision of TransCanada to cancel plans for its massive Energy East pipeline that would have carried tar sands oil from Western Canada across the country to Montreal and St. John. They say without being able to secure some of that oil for its own interests, the Portland Pipeline Corporation has no need and no way to pay for necessary improvements to reverse the flow of its pipeline, or to build required air pollution infrastructure to burn off volatile organic compounds. And therefore, they say, the lawsuit should be dismissed.
They need to have people willing to put oil in the pipeline from Montreal to South Portland in order to get the financing to make the necessary changes that they're going to have to do both in the pipeline itself and in adding the 2 huge air pollution control structures that they're going to have to put in on the wharf.
An attorney for the Portland Pipeline Corporation declined to talk on tape, but John Arimondo pointed to a written declaration from the company's president entered into the court record last week. In it, Thomas Hardison says TransCanada's decision does not change the company's intention to pursue its flow reversal project in the event the court eventually rescinds the ordinance. Although the cancellation of the Energy East project affects the options PPLC has for obtaining a supply of crude oil, Hardison says, It also preserves PPLC's status as the only pipeline operator in North America capable of shipping Canadian crude oil to the Atlantic coast. Members of a citizens group called Protect South Portland are watching the case closely.
People ought to be able to demand clean air.
Louise Tate joined other ordinance supporters outside the federal courthouse in Portland.
I have COPD. I can't live there if there's not clean air. So why isn't that even being mentioned in the courtroom, clean air?
Tate and others said the judge seemed more concerned about the pipeline company's bottom line than the health or environmental concerns of residents who support the ordinance.
What we've seen is over and over again an emphasis of what this means to the oil industry and protecting the interests of the oil industry.
Instead, Sarah LaChance of the group 350.org says there should be more emphasis on how to keep fossil fuels in the ground in the face of climate change. The judge left open when he might rule on the city's request to dismiss the lawsuit. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Once upon a time, treatment for hepatitis C was complicated. It required weekly visits to specialists and harsh drugs that often came with severe side effects. And the cure rate was less than 50%. A few years ago, new blockbuster antiviral drugs improved a patient's chances of curing the infection to nearly 100%, and with just one pill a day. The success of these new drugs now makes treatment possible in a primary care setting. And in Maine, that opens access up for rural patients in particular. But in part two of her series on hepatitis C, Patty White reports on why some patients are still missing out and increasing their risk of developing liver cancer.
On a warm August afternoon, Ryan Lamkins waits in a primary care exam room at the Catawba Valley Health Center in Holton. He's about to start treatment for hepatitis C.
Once I talked to these people here, it was such a relief.
A relief because Lamkins has lived with hepatitis C for more than 30 years, about half his entire life.
I mean, how much life do I have at 60? Who knows? But at this point, you can feel it periodically more than when you were younger. So if it clears it up, you won't get cancer of the liver, which is almost guaranteed from what I understand.
Hepatitis C is a viral infection that's transmitted through blood and most commonly through intravenous drug use. If it isn't treated, it can lead to liver failure, cancer, even death. Lamkin says he tried to get treatment several years ago, but at the time, it required a weekly 6-hour round trip to Portland to see a specialist, and he faced a regimen of medication with chemotherapy-like side effects.
It used to be the treatment was very, very difficult to do.
Dr. Alan Kilby is a gastroenterologist in Portland who specializes in liver disease. Kilby says early treatment for hepatitis C was not only harsh, it had mediocre results.
The cure rate was only about 40% overall.
That all changed when a drug called Sovaldi hit the market in 2014. It treated hepatitis C with one pill a day for 2 to 3 months with few side effects. Kilby says it was a miracle drug.
The cure rate is practically 100%. It's above 90%, certainly.
But many insurance companies still require that specialists provide treatment. And in Maine, most specialists are based in Portland and Bangor. That presented a problem for Dr. Rose Fuchs, the medical director of Catawba Valley Health Center, which has 6 clinics north of Bangor.
For our patients, because they lack transportation, it seemed like the majority of them were actually going without treatment. And, you know, the consequence of that, which we did see with one patient, was the progression to liver cancer.
Fuchs says she decided to take action. After some research, she started contacting specialists to see if they'd collaborate with Catawba Valley so local providers could dispense treatment under their guidance.
There were a lot of obstacles to overcome. We first had to find specialists that were willing to join in with us.
Specialists, she says, had legal considerations, such as opening themselves up to malpractice claims. They also had to agree to donate their time because there isn't a good model to bill for remote consults in telemedicine. But Maine Medical Center's Virology Treatment Center in Portland and Dr. Alan Kilby agreed to collaborate with Catawba Valley because, Kilby says, primary care physicians have to be part of the solution.
I think there's no way that the specialists are going to be able to treat everybody.
Kilby says there aren't enough specialists in the state, period, let alone in rural areas. He now collaborates with three remote health centers, Katahdin Valley, Penobscot, and Seaport in Belfast, where Dr. Peter Millard says hepatitis C is on the rise.
We have a substance use disorder clinic where we treat a lot of young people with drug issues, and among those population, a fair number of them are hepatitis C positive.
Physicians at Seaport have treated about 20 patients for hepatitis C in the past 2 years, and they've all been cured. Katahdin Valley has also seen a 100% success rate in the 30 patients it's treated. But Dr. Rose Fuchs says more physicians need to offer treatment to meet the demand, especially in northern Maine.
We were hoping with this project that we could be a resource for private community physicians who don't have access to telemedicine and the organizational resources that we have at Katahdin Valley Health Center.
That hasn't happened yet, says Fuchs. She understands why primary care providers, who are already stretched thin, aren't necessarily jumping at the chance to add hepatitis C treatment to their practice. But she's seen firsthand the dramatic impact it has on patients' lives.
It's life-changing. It's life-saving. It literally has turned people from being at death's door with cirrhosis or cancer to having a life that, you know, would be quite normal.
It's just a weight off your shoulders.
Brian Lampkins recently completed his hepatitis C treatment and says he's now cured. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And tomorrow, in the final part of our series, we'll explore a barrier to the promising new treatments for hepatitis C, the cost. And you'll find more stories and information on hepatitis C at mainepublic.org. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, November 21st, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.